We present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreiber. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Hello again and welcome to the Commonwealth Institute. Beethoven once said, "My music is for connoisseurs." So here's another edition of My Music. The cast, as ever, consisting of Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden versus John Amis and Frank Muir. Ian Wallace, as of 50 seconds ago, we are on the air.
On the air, if you have a little time to spare, you'll enjoy each minute, I'll declare, while we're on the air.
Ian, I'll bet that took you back a bit. Question, though, whose signature tune was it?
I see you've given up trying to get me to identify bits of classical music.
And asking bits of popular music.
Be not offended. Don't take it so hard.
No, I think I know. Oh, I'm not taking it hard because I think I know the answer to this.
Ah, well, right.
I think that was...
Makes a change from all the classical bits, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? I think that this particular man would almost be regarded as a classic himself.
Yes.
If it's who I think it is, Carol Gibbons.
Carol Gibbons, American, born in Massachusetts in 1903 and died in 1957. One mark to Ian Wallace and over to Dennis. Dennis, another drop of nostalgia before we move on to more serious subjects. I know you worry somewhat about your singing voice. Well, worry no more.
When you peek-a-boo again through my sweetie's window pane, lonely little kisser for me. Dance across the pillowcase till you see the sweetest face. Lonely little kisser for me.
Dennis, you were 5 when that record was made. It was made by the B.F. Goodrich Silvertown Chord Orchestra. There was something rather peculiar about the singer. What was it?
I think how he got his recording contract.
That's true.
I don't know.
He called himself the Something Tenor.
Did he? Yeah, well, that was how I would have described him. I don't know who it was.
Well, he wore a sort of disguise. Does this help you at all?
Well, there used to be a lot of people around that time who used to call themselves the Masked Lover and and they used to wear sort of dominoes and things, but I don't know which one this is.
Well, half a mark, right, because you couldn't possibly know anyway, so half a mark as much as you did know. He was Joseph M. White, the Silver Masked Tenor.
Well, I think the mask slipped down over his nose.
John Amis, and I quote, "My Aunt Fanny had a haberdashery, but now she lives at Burton-on-Trent." Richard Murdoch wrote those deathless lyrics to match this tune. Ballet Egyptian. Do you know the story of how that work by Luigini came into existence?
Oh, yeah.
It's rather special.
I do.
You do?
I do. When it was first done... somewhere, perhaps in...
Paris.
Paris.
When what
That's
was first
right.
done in Paris?
Well, the first performance was supposed to be for the opening of the Suez Canal. But
first performance of what, John?
Oh.
You forgot to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Aida.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes Aida.
Wilson, Keppel and Betty.
That's right. I was just going to say, that's who I associate that tune with.
Yes, actually, yes. Aida, you were saying.
Yes, anyway, they wanted some ballet music, and Verdi was a bit hoity-toity. And said he wasn't going to write any. So they got Luigini to write the ballet music. And actually, if you go through that ballet music, it's all in the right key for the big grand triumph scene of Aida. When Verdi heard it, he said, yes, that's quite good. I think I'll write some ballet music.
Yes, true enough. Verdi's Aida, yes, too short when first produced, and Luigini was commissioned to add ballet music, as you say. Mark to you. Frank, I believe you were born at a South Coast resort.
I was indeed, sir.
what is the connection between a South Coast resort and this music? And John may be able to help you. Turbulently marine, I always think that is.
La Mer.
Yes.
Why? Debussy.
Yes. Now, why the connection?
Bogner.
No, you're a little adrift, I'm afraid. You've gone along the coast a bit.
It's Bogner because the mayor's a lady there.
La Lady Mayoress de Bogner. Nice thought.
There's a spirit message from my left here, which says that Debussy has said erroneously, I think.
Yes.
To have finished La Mer at Eastbourne.
Eastbourne, as I had in mind, yes. Well, whether it's true or not, it's associated in the public mind, in the musical press reading mind, with Debussy, who was supposed to have written it at Eastbourne, La Mer, the whole thing. You think not, John, do you?
But he started it at Bognor.
I think the dates... the dates don't work out, but certainly he did go to Eastbourne. I mean, there are photographs of him on the third or fourth floor of the Grand Hotel Eastbourne.
Hmm.
The work which was begun in the Burgundian hills.
Yes. Whenever there's a really fun story in serious music, they usually manage to blow it sky high by the end, don't they?
Yes, what Stephen Potter used to call taking the Christmas out of something.
True enough. Yeah. Anyway, a mark to you, because you got the right answer in the end, your side. Here are the beginnings and endings of certain famous piano pieces, or at any rate, keyboard pieces. All you have to do is identify what comes in between. Ian Wallace, what begins like this and ends like this? Well,
quite a lot of exercises for young pupils.
That's right.
It's Sheep May Safely. What am I talking about? Jesus, Joy of Man's Desire.
Yes, and one mark for that. Whose arrangement would you say?
I would say Myra Hess.
Yes, for the other mark. The Myra Hess arrangement of Jesus, Joy of Man's Desiring.
Right? They played that at my wedding. I just thought I'd mention it.
Oh, yes, do.
While we were in the vestry.
Very nice, too. Dennis, for you, what begins like this? And ends like this?
I honestly don't. It's obviously Boogie, but I don't know what.
Don't you remember it? No. Don't you remember it? Yes, Boogie. Mm. Can you think of a boogie woogie pianist named Smith?
Well, that was the man who invented boogie woogie, wasn't it? Pine Top Smith.
Yes. Now, does that help?
Oh, in Pine Top's footsteps.
Yes. Now, well, half a mark there, but for the other mark, can you conceive or remember the name of the orchestra that introduced it, the famous record? All those years ago.
No.
Teddy Powell's orchestra.
Oh, Teddy Powell.
Half a mark, anyway, yes.
Steve, what did you play just now?
That's in Pine Top's footsteps.
Yes. But that's the same as that Shaker song we had on the programme this season, last season.
Well, there you are.
Da 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 da. The gift to be simple.
Yes. A nice point.
They all knock off from each other. They're all rip-offs. It's a cover version.
John, a specific answer called for, please, from you. What precisely begins like this and ends like this?
Interesting, because it ends in the wrong key.
Yes, well, yes, in a very, very different key. That's the key to the answer, of course.
Is it actually the same piece?
No.
Is it a collection of pieces?
Yes, it's a collection. It's a volume.
Ha, ha, ha,
and I want to know which volume, too.
Book two.
Book two of?
Of the 48. In other words, numbers 25 to 48.
Of the 48.
Well-tempered clavier.
Yes, the 48 preludes and fugues for well-tempered clavier. The key contrast was a hint, because it starts in C and ends in B minor.
Quite a cunning question.
Well, thank you. A cunning answer gets you 2 marks. Very good. Frank, yours is piano music that became orchestral. What sets out like this and concludes like this?
It's pictures at a thingy.
Yes.
Pictures at an exhibition.
Yes.
By Mussorgsky.
Yes. Here are four musicals or operettas. Can you guess in which year they were first performed? See if you can get within, say, 2 years. Ian Wallace, The Lilac Domino. The Empire Theatre, London, in...
Ooh, I just said about 1913.
It's not near enough, I'm afraid. It's 1918, The Lilac Domino, so I can't...
Oh, wasn't bad, was it?
Not bad, no. Dennis, Arnell.
Arnell. I don't know that one at all. So can you give me...
By the Gershwins. First produced Broadway.
Well, it must have been... It was a very early one,
yes,
was it?
So have a good guess. Then.
Well, now, the Gershwins...
Yes.
The first one that they did was, if I remember, called La La Lucille. you don't get musicals like that anymore. And that would be about 1917 or so. So this would be back in the early time.
Well, not quite so early.
About 1920, round about...
Well, I said within 2 years, 1922.
Oh,
good enough.
Yeah.
Give the boy a mark.
It's what I believe is known as getting in just under the wire.
That's right. John, The Cradle Will Rock...
which is an opera by Mark Blitzstein.
Yep.
And I would say that it was round about, let me see.
New York, this is.
Well, I met Mark Blitzstein in the war, and he had already written it.
Yes.
Which would suggest that it's about 39, 38?
1938 in New York, yes. Thank you. It was produced after the war at the Unity Theatre in London. A very, very good musical, too, incidentally. Terrific tunes in it. I can hum some of them still after just seeing it once.
The sad thing about his operas is that they, on the whole, came off best when he played them and sang them at the piano rather than when they were realised.
I know the feeling. Frank, again a date. The Beggar's Opera.
Ooh, thank you. Yes. Written by John Gay.
And asked that, but yes.
Put on by a gloomy impresario called Rich. Beginning of the 18th century. And the wit said that it was so successful it made Gay rich and Rich gay. And John Gay died in the early 1930s.
What?
1730s. So it's somewhere else. His relations, I was thinking of the other...
Noel Gay.
Yes. Roy Rich. Somewhere between 1725 and... 1730.
Yes. So.
3, 4.
Pitch it more or less halfway.
1730.
1728. A mark to you. Yes, a mark to you. Yes. I thought you might tell us on the 29th of January, but you weren't quite up to that. Splendid stuff. Some years ago in my music, on what was for us a very memorable occasion, one of the company was the late Owen Branigan. His singing voice, so rich and so musical, is featured in this next round of questions. So, listen to this.
The trumpet shall sound, and the day shall be raised, and the day shall be
Ian, from which part of which work does that come, the trumpet shall sound?
It comes from part 3
yes.
of Handel's Messiah.
Yes, part the third, it says in my rather nice dated edition of Handel's Messiah, 2 marks to you. There's a recitative just before that aria, "Behold, I tell you a mystery, we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. And I have been looking forward to telling you a story that Lord Soper told me, the clergyman. He was preaching at a church in Chicago, and after the service they said, do come and look at our creche. And he said, I'd love to. And they have this creche there where churchgoers can leave their babies during the service. And over the entrance to the creche are printed the words, we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed.
Sweet story.
Well, back to our beloved Branny. Dennis Norton, Owen Brannigan didn't only sing oratorio.
Remember me to one who lives there, for once she was a true love of mine.
So like Brownie, true love of mine. Familiar lyric, isn't it? Who were the duettists, Dennis, who made the best-selling version, and what title appeared on their record?
Well, they made it as Scarborough Fair on the Bridge Over Troubled Water LP.
Yes, that's right. Scarborough Fair stroke Canticle.
Oh, yes.
On my record. And the title of the two people?
Simon and Garfunkel.
Yes, two marks to you. John, who is doing what in this excerpt from what? Can you put a construction on that, John?
Arctually, yes.
Arctually.
It's from Noah's Ark.
Yes.
Benjamin Britten.
Yes.
And Noah is reading out the directions received from above as to how to build the ark.
Yes, that's right. The piece is not called Noah's Ark, it's called
Noah's Floody.
Noah's Floody, that's right. Mm. Benjamin Britten, two marks.
There's some wonderful lines.
I presume the construction was dovetailing.
There's some lovely language in it. I think it's from one of the Chester miracle plays. And at one point, Mrs. Noah, who is a bit of a shrew, gives him a box on the ears. And he said, my goodness, this is hot.
Frank, when Branny sang a song, you could always hear the words, even when he sang them in his own Northumbrian tongue. Listen closely, Frank, to those words.
I went to Bladen Races on the 9th of June, 1862, on a summer's afternoon. I took the bus for Bamberger's and she was heavy laden. The way we went along Collingwood Street, that's on the road to Bladen. Oh, and she should have seen us gathered, passing the folks along the road just as they were standing. There was lots of lads and lasses there, all with smiling faces, gathering along the Scotford Road to see the Bladen races.
Familiar old song. Frank, what was the date of that famous race meeting?
June.
Yes, June.
June came into it, it always does.
June came into it. Which number in June?
9th of June.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, madam. Yes, you just about scraped your marks there.
It's a kind of wake up at the back question, isn't it?
That's
or
where the answer,
June one.
That's where the answer came from, the back. All the songs in our final round this week have something to do with travel. In most cases, travel by sea, or generally by water. In Ian's case, the journey will be to a point in the Outer Hebrides where the young pretender landed. You've heard of him, Ian, haven't you?
Yes.
Meanwhile, Dennis, can you recall the watery saga of Steamboat Bill?
Oh, yeah.
Steamboat Bill.
I can't remember the verse. And I know the verse ends, the next papa you'll have will be a railroad man. Yes. Steamboat Bill, steaming down the Mississippi. Steamboat Bill, a mighty man is he. Steamboat Bill, riding down the Mississippi, trying to beat the record of the Robert E. Lee.
Yeah, that's right. What a memory.
Yes, I remember Jack Payne's band. Payne. Wasn't it Billy Scott Coomer?
Billy Scott Coomer,
yes.
Yes,
I thought it was, yeah.
Well, one of the few hyphenated dance band vocalists.
They have a number of there's a young lady now, a hyphenated young lady in the pop field. Yeah.
Dame Vera Lynch.
John, I've just been thinking, you were saying about Carol Gibbons. Do you remember every pianist used to do an imitation of Carol Gibbons, myself amongst them, and you did it by, when he played a tenth in the bass, he always played the top note first.
Yes.
So that you went, ker-joink.
Yes, instead of joint.
That was your sort of Carol Gibbons imitation, wasn't it?
That's right. Later on, of course, Russ Conway made a whole profession out of playing the top note of the tenth first. Get on, get on, get on.
I'll do it.
Billy May.
Like that. That's instead of. I can't even do it upside down.
Well, anyway. There's your musical mistakes, man, Steve.
John, the travel in your case is merely someone passing by. The words from 1570 or so, the music more recent. Passing by.
Oh, lovely.
There is a lady sweet and kind, was never face so pleased my mind. I did but see her passing by, and yet I love her till I die. Her gestures, motion, and her smile, her wit, her voice, my heart beguiles my heart, I know not why, yet I will love her till I die. And the last verse is, Cupid is winged and doth range her country, so my love doth change. But change she earth or change she sky, yet will I love her till I die.
We all thought, didn't we?
Yes.
Well,
cheated.
You gave us Peter Warlock, yes?
Yes, Peter Warlock. Which do you think is the nicer tune?
Let's ask the audience, which is the nicer tune?
Yeah, the other one.
Thank you. Thank you.
The other one by Edward Percival Cochran.
Having had a round of Branny, Branny and I both knew and greatly admired a bass singer of a former generation called Norman Allen, who died a year or two ago at the ripe old age of about 88 or 89. And he used to sing the other tune of this. And I was at a public dinner, where he was going to sing, and it was a stag do, and it was getting a bit rowdy. And he was determined he was going to sing Passing By, even to these rather rowdy chaps, fairly late in the evening. And he had this wonderful, sepulchral speaking voice. And he got up and he said, I'm going to sing a song called Passing By. And at the end, it's got a very low note. And if you don't shut up, you won't hear it.
Oh, they're lovely, yeah. Back to our travel songs. Frank, Sweet, Sweet Madeline is late getting home because her canoeist keeps stopping. Can you manage that in a song? A sort of...
Hang on. Cause when I'm paddling Madeline home. Yes, when I'm paddling Madeline home. We drift for a while, then row with the tide. I kiss her and hug her and paddle again. I'm paddling Madeline home. Dun, 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 dun. She never says no. And then I have a go. Paddling, paddling, sweet, sweet paddling, paddling, paddling.
Yes. A dead heat between thee and me, that was. And so, Ian, to you. The key F and the destination, I think, Eriskay.
Right.
Per mior honor, per mior vani, per mior sad am I without thee. When I'm lonely, dear, the night and wild the sea, by love's light my foot finds the old pathway to thee. Fare me
Once again, my music sails safely into the harbour on top of the hill. Congratulations and a free issue of rum to our victors this week, who are John Amis and Frank Muir. Goodbye.
Taking part in my music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis North. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Tony Shrine.